Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also the author of The Weed Agency. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you today, as usual. And Jim, the good martini broke just shortly after we recorded on Wednesday. There had already been a guilty verdict against former New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin. He'd been found guilty on 20 of 21 corruption counts in federal court. This is a guy who was a two-term mayor of New Orleans, most famous for all the FaceTime he got leading up to and, of course, following Hurricane Katrina. He was generally seen as the good guy in the media, and until they saw the pictures of the flooded school buses that never got out of the parking lots that a lot of people said could have helped to evacuate a lot of people out of New Orleans. Between that and some of the strange comments he made, he was a polarizing figure, to say the least. And then it turns out he was also taking bribes and kickbacks, a lot of them over the years, including hundreds of thousands of dollars from just one different person who liked to line the pockets of people in New Orleans. Jim, coming from this guy who he had many people on the right slapping their foreheads when he got reelected after Katrina, it's kind of a fitting end.
The story of Ray Nagin really is kind of a story of how the national press sees what it wants to see, is willing to ignore contrary evidence. There's a bit of a theme to today's martinis, now you think about it. You can put enough blame around all you want regarding Katrina, but look, their city had an evacuation plan, and it never got used. It never, you know, did anything. We all remember that very famous image of the school buses sitting there, gas from the gas tanks, you know, floating along on the water and stuff. And when the city turns into a disaster area and doesn't take nearly as many preparations and steps that it's supposed to do in the face of an approaching hurricane, a lot of that buck stops at the mayor. And he never had much good reason for why this hadn't been done. And a big reason was that, look, maybe he just wasn't that good a mayor. Basically, the anti-Bush atmosphere of the time required George W. Bush and Brownie and FEMA and the federal government to be the scapegoat. As a result of that, the press really kind of averted its eyes from that. Well, now we find out that Ray Nagin, you know, in addition to being a not very terribly competent mayor when his city needed him, was also a crook. Now, in Louisiana, particularly the bad old days of pre-Bobby Jindal, it's not that shocking. You know, 10 years in prison is actually less than he could have gotten. I noticed the judge dismissed the federal sentencing guidelines and reprimanded him for letting the city down after Hurricane Katrina. You know, it's not really in there, but just kind of observes this guy was a crappy mayor. So he's going to get 10 years in prison. We'll see how much of it actually serves. But it's nice to see a guilty verdict, and it's nice to see a fairly significant amount of prison time going to a guy who was a bad mayor who the media tried to convince us was a hero because he was criticizing President Bush.
On to the bad martini now, and it's from a great piece of The Federalist from Molly Hemingway, and she writes very well on a lot of different subjects, but her issue that's going viral in the conservative blogosphere today is media ignorance is becoming a serious problem. She opens the piece by talking about Hugh Hewitt interviewing Zach Carter from The Huffington Post and just asking him some basic questions as they talked about Iraq. He had no idea who Alger Hiss was. He had no idea who A.Q. Khan was. He had no idea that Bill Clinton had bombed Iraq in 1998 or that Gaddafi had reportedly disarmed in 2003 after seeing what happened to Saddam Hussein. She goes on to talk about essentially how liberal columnists don't even really bother to try and understand what the competing argument to their own ideology is. She devotes an entire section of the piece to Matt Iglesias, who we have certainly referred to from time to time. And the general theme is here that the left is perpetrating an argument on many different issues, Jim, based on arguments that are not based in fact and show a shocking lack of knowledge about history. And she says the deadly toxic combination is ignorance combined with arrogance.
Yeah, it is a great piece that articulates something that's kind of been rattling around the minds of a lot of folks on the right for a while. Because you see periodic examples of this. And Hugh Hewitt, I think, really has a kind of special role because he will do this. And I've had a bit of Professor Hewitt giving you the pop quiz live on air. Have you read this book? Are you familiar with this figure? Things like that. And I suppose we should kind of, you know, credit Zach Carter for not hanging up the phone or losing his cool or something like that. Zach Carter doesn't know a lot about all of these topics that he started opining about in response to Hugh Hewitt's interview of Dick Cheney. And look, maybe Zach Carter knows a lot about economics. I don't know. Most of the questions weren't really in that area. I am kind of struck by people who have no idea who Alger Hiss is. I'm kind of struck by people who have never heard of A.Q. Khan. He is only like the guy who, you know, helped get Pakistan a nuke.
Right.
You know, you're like that's kind of a big deal. And you'd think that would, you know, resonate with people. And you kind of just don't know the gaps in the knowledge of all kinds of people. But what's really kind of, you know, disturbing about this is the number of people in the press. And I'm sure if you looked around, you probably could find some folks on the right. But the right doesn't dominate the ranks of the media the way the left does. To kind of paraphrase Donald Rumsfeld, the unknown unknowns, these people don't know what they don't know. I do kind of think that there is kind of this personality difference between the right and the left. And that I'd like to think that most of us on the right are pretty good at laughing at ourselves, pretty good at acknowledging our own foibles and mistakes and problems and areas where we're not perfect. Our self-image, hopefully, isn't as invested in our sense that we're right about everything. Part of the reason you're conservative is you don't want too much power in the hands of individuals in the government because individuals are human beings and they're going to screw up. You know, to err is human. That's one of the reasons we don't want to concentrate power amongst people. Folks on the left who you know, are fairly young in life don't remember these things personally. There's this argument kind of floating around for a while that for a lot of folks on the left, history began in 2000 in the Bush v. Gore decision. And as a result of that, they don't remember, you know, one, they weren't alive during the 80s and 90s, or they weren't old enough to pay attention, but they also didn't bother to pay any attention to history. And so even if they know a little bit of U.S. history going back Revolutionary War stuff, modern history, our youth and our parents' ages, are big blank sections of their collective mind here. And so they don't, you know, they don't know stuff like Haldir Hiss and stuff like that. Maybe all they know, Greg, comes from We Didn't Start the Fire, which is an excellent song, but isn't exactly an in-depth exploration of the topics. It's chapter headings in your history book. It's not the actual text.
Yeah, you're right. Basic history stuff. I mean, Haldir Hiss, every school kid, maybe that's an indictment on the education system to some extent. And part of it is certainly higher education. Most schools trend to the left. I went to Hillsdale, so as you probably know, we didn't get a lot of the liberal propaganda. In fact,
Haldir Hiss is day one at Hillsdale, isn't it?
I'll tell you what is day one. My first class ever was political economy, and Molly talks about Hayek in here and The Road to Serfdom. That was required reading day one. I kid you not. So there's perhaps a difference in where you get your education, but if parents are doing their jobs, schools are doing their jobs, and you just have a basic hunger to understand the topic you're covering, hopefully some of this stuff will seep through. But apparently for a lot of people, it's not.
Curiosity might be the single most basic prerequisite of being a journalist, of being a reporter. And it's kind of stunning how many people actually aren't all that curious. They know everything, so why would they need to read any more about it? So I'm always struck by reporters say, yeah, I'm really not into books. I don't like to read. Anyway, we should move on to our third martini, which fits in well with the other
one. It fits in very well when it comes to, I know it's true, even though this was false. This is the perfect martini. This is Robert Redford has signed on to play Dan Rather in Truth, a film based on the 2005 memoir Truth and Duty, The Press, the President, and the Privilege of Power. The book, written by Rather's then-producer, Mary Mapes, centers on the firestorm that erupted in September of 2004 after Rather reported that George W. Bush had received special treatment while serving in the Texas Air National Guard during the Vietnam War, a report that was based on some documents that were suspected to be forgeries. Cate Blanchett will play Mapes.
Stop right there, Greg. I cannot let you read. No, this is the Haldir Hiss of our generation. There is no controversy over them being alleged forgeries. They are bleeping forgeries, okay? Because here's the thing. If you're Dan Rather and you're saying these are authentic, the burden of proof is on you to show us that these are authentic. And oh, by the way, when this document from the early 1970s just happens to perfectly match Microsoft Word in 2004, that's an astonishing coincidence, don't you think? And then the next thing is, you know, was there a device that could create it back then? And, you know, Rather could say, yes, there was. Yes. And do you know what it cost at the time? $3,500. That's how much it cost. And what's more, as one of the pajama Hadeen who was screaming bloody murder about this as I screamed during this podcast, the guy who allegedly wrote it didn't know how to type. Okay? So you put all this out there. And of course, the Mapes book doesn't really address any of this stuff. It basically gets into all of us unshaven, knuckle-dragging, terrible, the feeding frenzy around here. You know what? When you bleeping lie to the entire country about the President of the United States in the middle of a re-election campaign based on BS documents that everybody could tell were fake, You deserve to be the subject of a feeding frenzy. This is what feeding frenzies are made for. So the idea, oh, these mean bloggers are picking on Mary Mapes, and oh, Dan Rather and his distinguished career, we all remember him standing in the hurricane. It was an astonishingly frustrating book to read because she just had learned nothing. She conceded nothing. Everyone was picking on her, the sense of victimization. You know, the idea of Cate Blanchett, one of the great actresses, playing her. Unless you're Indiana Jones, you don't sign Cate Blanchett to play the villain. Right? And so you know she's going to be portrayed sympathetically. And then, you know, Rather as you know, being played by Robert Redford, the only kind of interesting irony I found out of this, Greg, is that you realize this is now the second time that Robert Redford is playing a sleeper agent of the nefarious criminal organization Hydra. Captain America fans are laughing at that, and people who didn't see it yet. Yeah, so spoiler alert, came out a couple months ago. Sorry. But yeah, so Robert Redford's a bad guy. So is Dan Rather, so it fits.
Well, the good thing is, you know, if you go back to the Valerie Plame movie, they don't do very well because people know they're just completely tinged with a partisan edge to them. A lot of those movies over the last few years have not done well at all, and I have a suspicion that will be the same case with this one.
Valerie Plame is writing, you know, spy novels now. And she's free to do that. You know, I mean, she's never going to be Brad Thor or anything. But, you know, she's fine. Go right ahead. You know, do what you want. The Valerie Plame biopic, the movie, you know, allegedly was about her life. And at one point, she's being chased by shadowy bad guys. Do you remember any chase scenes during that whole controversy? At any point, did, you know, Scooter Libby chase her down dark alleys? No, you know, so, you know, of course, in the movie, there's no scene in which, you know, Richard Armitage, Colt Powell's number two at the State Department, calls up Bob Novak and says, oh, yeah, Wilson's wife works for CIA. Like, that scene isn't in there, even though that's actually what happened. And so it is this, like, kind of insanely idealized, or it basically is a bit like Aaron Sorkin's The Newsroom, a liberal insisting, this is how it should have happened. This is how we imagine it happening, in which all of the people who disagree with are terrible and nefarious and scary, and all of our, you know, heroes are perfect and charming and beautiful and all that stuff. And he suspects to say, we'll see what happens. I don't know if Jerry O'Connell will be the guy playing me in the movie as the bad guy, the nefarious blogger who's attacking their reputations and stuff like that. This is this fictionalization of things that we all saw and remembered. I remember this during the Palin movie on HBO. I think you could probably say with Recount. I mean, we saw these things happen, and yet Hollywood likes creating its own version of events, oftentimes inaccurate, and saying, well, this is how we kind of wish it had happened. And you kind of wonder how many members of the audience, thankfully, as you said, a lot of these things don't have big viewership or big audiences for these things. But there's just something kind of mentally disturbing, this instant rewriting of history. To make sure one side is always the heroes and the other side is always the villains. And so that makes it, you know, probably about as crazy a martini as we've had in quite some time, Greg.
Yeah. All right. Great way to end the day. Jim, we'll do it again tomorrow. Have a great day.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.